This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and we welcome everybody joining us coast to coast on Sirius XM satellite radio, and of course, everybody tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And each and every week on this program, I have the opportunity to take you inside the lives of so many of the trainers that make this sport go. And it's always an enjoyable visit. And tonight promises to be no exception. Trainer Art Sherman is going to be with me for the entire hour here tonight on Trainer Talk. And 77-year-old Art Sherman has sent out, how about this, more than 12,000 starters in a training career that spans almost 3.5 decades. Nearly 2,200 of those runners have been victorious. He has been around this game a long time. He has seen just about everything, and he's done most. But the one thing that Art Sherman has yet to do is saddle a starter in the Kentucky Derby. He's hoping that California Chrome will fulfill that dream this year. And Art, nice enough to be with me here tonight. Art, thanks so much for spending some time here and being part of Trainer Talk tonight.
Oh, I appreciate this. This will be fun.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And, you know, I'm just curious, what goes through your mind when you hear people talk about Art Sherman saddling a horse in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, you know, I've got so many friends from over all the years, Northern California, Southern California. You know, it's kind of really wholesome bunch of people, you know, that I know. And you know, I never thought really at this stage of the game that I'd wind up with a Kentucky Derby starter or a horse now that's going to be the favorite for the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's been quite a run for me, and I'm really appreciative of all the things that have happened to me.
Can it also be somewhat overwhelming at this point?
It is. You know what I mean? It's a different ball game. You know, usually you watch other people do it. Now I'm in the limelight. It was quite an affair. I had the NBC was down at my house here in San Diego and did an hour show on us. So it was nice. You know, they were just one-on-one. And it was really going to turn out good, I think. You know, I hope so.
Well, we're recording this show just a few weeks out from the first Saturday in May. You've just watched your horse dominate the Santa Anita Derby a few days ago. Have you been able to slow down enough to enjoy the ride?
Oh, I've seen the reruns about 10 times. I just, you know, it kind of, every time I see it, it brings a little more nostalgia to me, to be honest with you. I say to myself, wow, look at this horse run, you know what I mean? Sometimes I got to pinch myself because, you know, being a former rider and knowing what it takes to get the horse in the position, and Victor does such a great job with this horse, you know, I think they're really a great pair together. He's got so much confidence in his horse, even though they got banged around leaving the gate. You know, he just let the horse get in stride, and boom, he was in a contention right from first turn. You know what I mean? He had horses on the outside, horses on the inside, and showed a real game performance. You know, it gives me another, you know, sometimes you think when a horse is drawn out, they're not, have a real fighter instinct in them, you know, everything went their own way, they dominated, you know. But this race in the Santa Anita Derby was really big for me, you know. I mean, I saw Candy Boy and got no excuse. He's a half a length off of me at the 3A pole. You got an opportunity that's sitting right over there, Baffert's and Dead Aim on me, a length off the lead, and they all trying to get to me. And then when Victor just asked him a little bit to run, and he just drew off, you know, and turning for home, it kind of just blew me away a little bit. You know, I just said, well, now the running's going to be. And there was no running to get after him. You know, he just opened up five like they were standing still, and I'm kind of awed, you know. He just kind of galloped to the wire the last 70 yards. Victor's looking back and started pulling him up. I'm saying, wow, you know, he's for real. I said, you know, that was the first thing in my mind, you know. So
yeah,
it was a great experience.
Are you his biggest fan?
I would have to think so. Nicole and I are buddies. He's the rock star. I'm the manager.
Art Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Dipton. Art, I had chills. We were on site to do the coverage Saturday afternoon, and I had chills watching California Chrome pull away down the stretch, as you just described. Was it an emotional win for you as well?
Oh, it sure was. You know, I've never won a million-dollar race. You know, the biggest race I ever won was 400,000 grade one, which is great. You know, winning a grade one is great. You know, I've won quite a few over the years, and I just... It kind of took my breath away, you know what I mean? I just, the way he's doing it, you know, it's kind of freaky. Unless you've been around a lot of horses and rode horses and you watch the ones that do this, and I always used to say, geez, I wish I had a horse that could draw away like that. Now I got one, and I know how it feels, you know. It's a pressure type of move. I was up at 2:30 in the morning, went over to the barn and took the bandages off and felt his legs. I couldn't even sleep. I'm saying, well, let me make sure he's okay. You know, I had my son, who's assistant, you know, trainer, and I had my groups. Everybody kept telling me he pulled up great, you know, because I never got a chance to get back and see him. I was on radio shows and television shows, and by the time I got back to the barn, he was already done up before and getting ready to go back to Los Alamitos. So I never got a real good chance to feel any of his legs or anything. My son was in the receiving barn, and of course my groom, I kept asking him, "Is he all right?" "Oh yeah, Patron, he's fine, you know. I said, okay, but it's not like yourself looking at the horse, you know. So I got up at 2:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep anyhow after that. You know, I just kind of had to pinch myself and said, wow, I wonder how he is, you know. So I went over to the barn and checked him out, and then I felt really good and went for a cup of coffee. And here comes the rest of all the newspaper people were out there that morning.
Wow, what a great story. We're going to talk plenty more about California Chrome as we make our way throughout the hour here this evening on Trainer Talk. But I want to go back to the beginning, Art, and take me back to your childhood. You grew up not in California, but in Brooklyn. Did you come from a racing family?
No, my father was a barber. You know, we moved out to California when I was 7 years old. He had problems, you know, with emphysema and lung problem, and always had a tough time breathing, you know. So the doctor recommended that he be in dry humidity, you know, where it wasn't cold and he could get some warm weather, and that would be. So we moved out there and moved to L.A., and he wound up getting a barbershop later on down there around Silver Lake District, Echo Park, and I used to come in there on the weekends, and you know how people in the barbershop were, and I don't know if they're still that way. Now all the barbershops are different. But anyhow, the barbershop was a place where you had a lot of sports people betting and this, and the racing was really big in that day. And a couple of his clients said, oh, God, your son's little enough to be a jockey. Why don't you look into that, you know? And it sounded pretty fascinating to me, you know what I mean? So one summer I went over and tried to apply for a job with Rex Ellsworth, you know what I mean? And they told me to come back in September, which I did. And I started on the ranch for a year, went through breeding season, and bred a lot of mares. We had that famous stud there, Khaled, and, you know, he was a champion for a few years. And he was the father of Swaps and Heather Call, Fleet Call. We won 22 stakes at Hollywood Park one season. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Wow. And how old were you at that point? How old were you then?
I was 18.
18. Wow. And why?
But I was
why...
16 when I first started with them. I was 16 years old.
Yeah. Why Rex's farm? Why'd you go there?
Well, I didn't know anything about a horse. You know what I mean? I kind of, the only horseback riding I think I did was take an hour ride on a pony in Elysian Park. That was about my my desire to be a jockey at that point. You know what I mean? And then I got to thinking about it, and I said, wow, it sure sounded like it would be a great life. You know, if I can make it, I'll try it. You know, I don't know if I'm good enough, you know, but a lot of determination and a lot of work, you know what I mean? And got on horses for Rex, and they were all cowboy style, you know what I mean? I figured if I could make it through their program, I could make it, you know what I mean? And I did. I was tough, and you know, I used to get bucked off 3-4 times every day, you know what I mean? We broke them cowboy style, you know, you put them in a corral and you sack them out and throw the western saddle on them and head down the road, you know. It wasn't like they do it in Kentucky, you know, take more time because we had so many that we had to just break them and go on with them, you know. So it was different, but they really taught you how to ride and become a horseman, you know what I mean? You pay your dues, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, at the age of 16, what about going to school?
Well, I went to 11th grade, and I said, well, you know, what am I going to do if I have to do this? And I like it a lot. I could always go back to school and get a high school education, but I was always pretty sharp. You know, I had a good grades, and you know, I just couldn't see myself. I didn't know what I was going to do, but if I had the pass to take it, then I was going to take it. And they say you have to start young and to be in this business, and I did. You know what I mean? And my folks kind of balked a little bit about it, but I just told them, hey, you know, it's my future. I don't know if I'll be good at it, and I don't know how I'll succeed, you know, at that age. But, you know, and it's been a good life. I've been all over the United States. I rode for so many people and had Richard Nixon give me the trophy. You know, I went to Whittier High School, and he went to Whittier High School. And
really?
And Ned Bowie, yeah. And he came back to the jocks room with me, and he put his arm around me. I had J. Edgar Hoover. I had all the FBI men around me, Eddie. So I, you know, Secret Service, whatever they were. Then it was pretty cool, you know. And then the headlines the next day, old neighbors meet, you know. I won the correction handicap with a horse called Pink Alero, you know, and she was a nice filly for me. Got me started back there. And you know, I met a lot of nice people. I went to Florida for 8 or 9 years in the winter and stayed back east once I went back, you know. Once I went back with Swaps when we went as a four-year-old, you know, I stayed back there. Leased my contract out to Tommy Hurd, and I stayed with him for about almost a year and was riding horses through the Middle West and all through there. And it's got, you know, never was the high-class rider. You know, we had a lot of good riders in them days, you know, I think outstanding riders. And always held my own, though, you know, and made a living for my family. And then it got to where I was in my 40s. I said, hey, listen, all the people that I've been riding for have either passed away or retired. And I said, you know, I had some good teachers. I'm going to see if I can do this. And rode my last race. I told everybody, I said, listen, I had one good teacher, Paul Godotti, who was a real good friend of mine. I rode for him for years and watched him work around the horses. And I said, this is what I want to do, you know. So actually the first horse I ever saddled win. So I last race I rode as a jockey win, and the first one I saddled win. So,
wow.
You know, I had only two horses when I started, and it just got better and better. And, you know, here I am, 77, getting my first Derby shot. So, you know, it's not an easy game.
No, it's absolutely not an easy game. So it doesn't sound like it was a difficult decision for you to make when you decided to go from being a rider and hang that up and then go on to training horses. Was it not that difficult?
I always loved to be around the horses. You know what I mean? I studied, you know. I know a jockey gets off at 2 minutes and jumps off one, don't have to worry about it. But, you know, a trainer's 24-hour job, you know, it's dedication. a lot of hard work, you know, and, you know, hours of talking to the owners, and everybody has their ups and their downs, and, you know, everybody's not going to be on the same page with everybody. So it's kind of, you know, the people that make it in this game got to have a lot of perseverance, I'll tell you, because it's tough.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When Victor won the Santa Anita Derby with California Chrome, it was about, what, a $60,000 payday for him? What's the most you ever made riding races?
Oh, God, I won the Santa Catalina. That was, I think, my biggest thing. I think that was maybe at that time when I won that at Santa Anita. I think it was like $50,000 purse, if I'm not mistaken. I'm, you know, it's been a lot of years. But I never got to ride with the type of money they're giving away. That was my first $1 million race through the Santa Anita Derby. You know, that was my biggest payday I ever had as a trainer.
Wow.
At one shot, you know.
Wow. Go back to Swaps for a minute, because you mentioned working with Rex, and of course, at the age of 18, you're a very young man. You're the work rider for Swaps. You get the opportunity to go to Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby in 1955 with him. Tell me about that experience.
Oh, it's great. You know what I mean? I wasn't in the limelight. I was back at the barn and taking care of things. You know, I never even made it over to the winner's circle. You know, I just watched and was so proud of that horse. You know what I mean? I said, wow, he won the Kentucky Derby. You know what I mean? And I remember as a two-year-old when he first came to the barn, big old green lanky little guy, and I told John Burton was the stable rider at that time, and I told John, he went on a Mormon mission for 2 years, and I said to him, hey, listen, I said, I think you're leaving at the wrong time. I said, we got a couple of horses that come back next year are going to be outstanding. I told him that, you know, and I said, why don't you stick around, you know, which would have helped me because I was next in line. But then Shoemaker got to riding all of the horses, and, man, they kept winning and winning and winning one after another, you know. And then it was a lot tougher for the next guy coming up because, you know, they already had all that success. So as a contract rider, it would be more adversely for me to go with somebody else, you know, to get a better shot, you know. But they still rode me on quite a few horses. I won quite a few races. But, you know, to be in the background with Shoemaker, you know, he was the best of the best. You know what I mean? I can't blame him for using him over anybody else, you know.
Yeah, how good was Shoe?
Super, super rider. God, just a natural ability, you know. And, he was in a class all by himself, you know.
You know, you said you didn't even make it to the winner's circle. Where'd you watch that Kentucky Derby?
Back
at the barn?
From the backside.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Nashua was the big horse on the East Coast at that time, that same year.
Yeah, and there was the match race, too, you know.
Yeah, the huge match race, the big East-West rivalry, you know, that was there.
I know. I had a lot of mixed emotions that day, too.
Really? How come?
I always thought that your horse should have never run in the match race. He wasn't 100% the way I would think he would be, you know. I was sick to my stomach after that race because they said that R. Carroll outrode Shoemaker and did this. That wasn't the truth. God, I don't think to this day that Nashua could have beat Swaps doing anything. I mean, of course, I might be biased about it, too. You know what I mean? They were completely different horses. R. Carroll used to have to kill that horse to make him run, you know. And Swaps used to run off with Shoe, you know what I mean? That was the difference right there, you know.
Yeah.
He was such a free-running horse. And when on his heyday, there was no horse that could beat him, you know what I mean? He beat the best of the best, you know.
Well, what did it mean to racing at that time to have the West Coast horse in Swaps come in and win the Derby and be so successful?
The hard boots went nuts when I was back there. When that first game, you know, we figure eight in between the barns, bareback. That's what we used to do. Instead of walking them, we'd get on bareback and figure eight them between the barns.
Wow.
And they thought, well, who in the world are these guys? You know, I mean, I didn't realize it till later on in years, you know, that how the Kentuckians, you know, they're great. I rode for a lot of them. But at that stage, being a cowboy from California. It almost remind me of Mind That Bird, that movie that's coming out, which I hadn't got to see, but I'm going to sure see it. It's that kind of threw me back to that era, you know.
Did it in some ways maybe change the sport when Swaps came over and beat the best from the East Coast?
Oh, I think so. They took a lot of, then they said, oh, maybe a cow, you know, because if you weren't a Kentucky bred, you couldn't run, you know, that was, no cow bred ever beat any Kentucky bred, you know what I mean? It was unheard of at that time, you know. So it was interesting, you know, to say the least, you know what I mean? It's, but they got a lot of respect for that horse. They loved him after they watched him back east, and, you know, he never ducked anybody, and believe me, we had rabbits being chased at him, and, you know, we ran Calumet, put two horses in the race, one to kill him off, you know, because he had that natural speed. They'd open up 8 or 9 lengths, and Swaps would see him in front of him and run off with you. You couldn't hold him. You know,
wow.
He broke record after record, you know what I mean? I was just awed at him. I was taken to the post on the pony in them days, you know. I was pretty close to that, you know. I was riding a few horses on the side and just watching him, you know, he was just a super horse. You know?
Well, you know, earlier you used the word cowboy when you were talking about working with Rex in the early days, Rex Ellsworth, and he was a bit of an outcast.
I was mostly with Mitch Tenney, you know. He was the trainer.
Yeah.
Rex, you know, he wasn't around as much as, I mean, you know, me and Mitch got really close, you know, as, you know, friends too, you know, and I had a lot of respect for him as a trainer. He knew horses, but I'll tell you, he shot every horse himself and worked from morning till night. I never seen any man like him, you know what I mean? He's just made out of iron, you know. I used to hold horses while he was shoeing them all afternoon, you know, and I just wondered, I said, how did this guy do that, you know what I mean? And then train and then go to the ranch in the afternoon and break yearlings and I didn't know how he did it. To me, it wasn't enough time in the day. You know?
Yeah.
You just, that era, you know, this is a hard, strong cowboy type of guy that, you know, lived for the horse, you know. Sometimes they used to say he was a little hard on horses, but, you know, they either made it or not. You know, after you have so many, you know, the ones that survive to be runners are the ones that make it, you know. And the others just, or horses, you know, you can see by the pattern now, you know, God, I go in a race now and I see Baffert, and I'm 800,000, 10 and change worked out of the gate, and here you got a maiden that if you went in 13 to change, I thought he was doing pretty good. Yeah. I said, if this race is running 10 and change, I got no chance, you know what I mean? And most of the time, he had the best horse, you know what I mean? And, but now it's changed a little, you know what I mean? I think that we have a lot of good trainers on the West Coast, and Baffert is one of them. And, you know, you got John Sadler, wins a lot of races. We have great, great trainers, you know, and they see we go any place with California horses now and win races. You know, there's no place we don't go to that we're not competitive, you know. So they run a good horse at you out here.
Talking with trainer Art Sherman on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're really just getting started. A whole second half of the show yet to come, so stay with us. We're going to be back to continue this discussion with Art Sherman on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Where will you be this summer? The Fasig Tipton 2014 yearling sales will be here before we know it, so make plans now. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky will be held July 14th. In 2013, the sale boasted an average of more than $89,000 and a median of $72,000, and the percentage rate of return of 43% was the third highest of any yearling sale in North America. The Saratoga sale on August 4th and 5th is always one of the top international yearling marketplaces. The sales $295,000 average in 2013 maintains its leadership role, and with the highest percentage of profitable yearlings among all sales in North America this past year, it's the only place to be this August. New York bred yearlings are in the spotlight August 9th and 10th in Saratoga with a $430,000 average and major increases in both average and median in 2013. The New York bred sale is the most productive auction for the cream of the New York bred crop. So where will you be this summer? Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair Strip's gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair Strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair Strips.
It's time for a new type of wagering service. One that gives you cash back on every wager. One that provides outstanding customer service where you can wager online or by phone with no fees on over 120 thoroughbred harness and greyhound tracks. It's time for BetPTC.com, racing's best kept secret. Join today and take advantage of our cash sign-up bonus. Then start earning cash back instantly on every wager you make. Join BetPTC.com and upgrade your wagering account today.
DerbyBox.com is the world's only full-time tour and travel company devoted predominantly to thoroughbred racing and the Kentucky Derby. A local Louisville area business since 1998, DerbyBox.com offers more than 25 years first-hand experience in Kentucky Derby travel and ticket packages. At DerbyBox.com, you'll find tickets and packages for every budget and taste, from Millionaire's Row to the infield. So don't delay. Book your trip to the 2014 Kentucky Derby today at DerbyBox.com. DerbyBox.com is in no way affiliated with Churchill Downs or Ticketmaster.
It's been more than a decade since Funnyside became the first New York bred to win the Kentucky Derby. Now, New York has two combatants hoping to follow in Funnyside's hoofsteps.
It's Samrat narrowly, and Samrat will stay undefeated.
So New York bred Samrat and his brave runner-up in both the Gotham and Wither Stakes, Uncle Cy, are both on the road to the Derby while proving that New York breeders are increasingly breeding quality thoroughbreds that can compete across America and around the world. Learn more about our awards program at nybreds.com.
RacehorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RacehorseReport.com. Make RacehorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RacehorseReport.com.
You can be a better bettor just by knowing how a horse is working.
For the first time ever, RacingWithBruno.com's reports are available straight from the source.
Racing with Bruno's With the Works takes you behind the past performances into the morning routines that matter most.
With over 20 years of experience, our team of analysts specialize in first-time starters and layoff horses, as well as full-card workout reports and selections.
Go to RacingWithBruno.com.
Now with the works.
Interested in handicapping tournaments? Daily Racing Form has you covered. First, visit drf.com/tournaments to get information on upcoming online qualifiers for the DRF NTRA National Handicapping Championship, the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, Public Handicapper, and handicapping contests at DRF Bets. See contest schedules, prize details, links to tournament blogs, and more. Everything you need to enter and play. You'll find it all at drf.com/tournaments. Then check out the winning contest player by Peter Thomas Fornatal, the newest title from DRF Press. In this 320-page book, Fornatal interviews over 30 of the country's best players and, with their assistance, lays out a complete strategy to help you win. Order it today at drf.com. And don't forget to visit drf.com/tournaments to get all the details on upcoming qualifiers, contests, and more. That's drf.com/tournaments.
HRRN takes you inside the world of thoroughbred racing with a variety of programs.
Take me through a list of programs.
Don't miss the Equine Forum every Saturday morning.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah, I like that.
Trainer Talk, presented by Fezig Tipton, Wednesday evenings.
Storytelling is big for me.
The Brisnet.com call-in show on Thursdays.
Having people talk to the radio by telephone is an exciting idea.
And the Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview show every Friday.
On the money. Check it.
Plus, hear live racing from across the country every Wednesday through Friday on HRRN Live. And HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events with exclusive coverage of the Triple Crown, Breeders' Cup World Championships, and more.
Wow, that's huge.
Make HRRN your home for all things thoroughbred racing on the radio.
What time is it?
Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of all our programming or to listen live online.
This memorable moment in Kentucky Derby history is presented by the Horse Racing Radio Network, exclusive radio partner of the Kentucky Derby. For a complete broadcast schedule, visit horseracingradio.net. The Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. The Kentucky Derby spotlight always shines on the horses hoping to be draped in the famed garland of roses. But on the first Saturday in May 2010, jockey Calvin Burrell also found himself sharing the limelight. Having won the Derby for the first time in 2007 aboard Street Sense, and again 2 years later with 50-1 long shot Mind That Bird, Burrell would look to accomplish the unthinkable in 2010, winning three Kentucky Derbies in the span of 4 years. Nicknamed Calvin Bo-Rail for his exceptional ability to guide a horse to victory along the inside rail, it was fitting that as the field entered the stretch, Calvin would find himself slipping through an opening along the inside.
Final furlong, it's Calvin Burrell and Super Saver in front to in second, Patio Prado down the outside, Icebox is flashing home, racing up the line, Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher and for Calvin Burrell, Burrell's third win in the Kentucky Derby.
Calvin Burrell returned to the Derby winner's circle, tipping his cap and raising his arm skyward to the cheers and admiration of the more than 150,000 fans beneath the Twin Spires. Yet another memorable moment in Kentucky Derby history. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, visiting with trainer Art Sherman here tonight for the entire hour of the program. But we'll get back to Art here in just a moment. But first, want to tell you about Thoroughbred Racing returning to Woodbine. That's right, Thoroughbred Racing is back at Woodbine Saturday, April 12th, post time 1 p.m. Woodbine kicks off the season with great racing and bets like the Pick 4 that carries an early guaranteed pool of $100,000 Saturdays and Sundays and $50,000 on Fridays. Woodbine will be offering 20-cent bet minimums on all trifecta, superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools throughout the meet. And you can play the jackpot high five and win big with one of the newest bets in Woodbine's arsenal of wagers. A low win takeout of 14.95%. Live thoroughbred racing begins at Woodbine Saturday, April 10th. Again, post time 1 p.m., scheduled every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday until December 7th. And the Wednesday night product begins on May 28th. And you can get more information by visiting woodbineracetrack.com. Well, as I mentioned, and if you couldn't tell from the first half of the program, Art Sherman has been around the game for quite some time. He's seen a lot of things. He's done a lot of things in the game. And Art, you told me just a short time ago, as we were in that commercial break, that you are sitting in your office at the house and you are surrounded by memorabilia and pictures from your career. What is your most prized possession?
Well, you know, I've heard so many nice horses, you know what I mean, over the years that I think of the first stakes winner I ever had with Amanda's Affair, and she won three or four stakes for me and kind of got me started with other clients and everything. And you know, you look back, who's your favorite horse? You know, I raised one horse that won the Hollywood Derby called Hamish High, and he's standing in Kentucky over George Kerkorian's farm right now. And I still got one broodmare, that same mare that drops her foal, and we got a hat trick coming up in the September sale. So, you know, I dabble a little bit into breeding, and I own parts of a lot of different horses now. I'm in partnerships, you know, so it's been good. You know what I mean? You have your ups and downs, like everybody, you know, and especially in the breeding end of it. It's just so hard to come up with a runner. And when you look back and see these people, Steve Colburn and Perry Martin, the two owners that had this colt, you know, the first foal out of a mare that paid $7,000 out of a stud that's a $2,500 horse. You know what I mean? You look back and you say, wow, how did they get this horse? You know what I mean? It's amazing. You know what I mean?
Well, it is definitely a game that's built on dreams, and for the owners of California Chrome, that dream is definitely coming true. We'll talk about California Chrome here in just a minute. We're going to get to him. We talked about him a bit in the beginning of the program. But Art, I want to go back to something you mentioned a short time ago in the first half of the show about Mesh Tenney and working so closely with him and his work ethic. It could be considered very much old school, and we've heard that term thrown around last year with the Derby with Shug McGahey. Some people would say that you're going to be the old school poster child for this year's Derby. Hey, look, Shug's only 63. I mean, come on. He doesn't know what old school is.
He's a youngster. He's a young guy.
Yeah. He doesn't know what old school is compared to you, does he?
I'm not sure that even, you know, I met Shug. It's been a long time ago. He probably don't even remember me, you know what I mean? But, you know, you go inside in New York for the Breeders' Cup and you run different horses. You know, you see them guys and you say hello and everything, but I have never got the pleasure of sitting down and talking to them. I know Dwayne Lucas and all them guys from being out in California. But he's a very good trainer. Yeah, I saw his record over the years and always liked the way he prepared horses to run. You know, I have a lot of, you know, Alan Jerkins is another one that I idolize a little bit, you know, knowing how he's still tough and reminds me of myself a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, they always ask him, well, what are you going to do? When are you going to retire? He says, what am I going to retire for? I might get a Derby winner next year, you know. So I'm in that same category, you know.
Are you old school in your approach to training horses?
Well, I am, but, you know, old school, what you could have done with a horse years ago, you can't do now. You know, it's not that the training methods, it's just that the feed programs, just the way the race tracks are, the different, you know, we used to have them good old loam tracks, and now you got all that Tapeta and this type of, you know, all these different tracks are all made of different materials. You know, I'm just an old school dirt man. That good old loam dirt to run over, and it's something that breeds underneath you. You know what I mean? I that's why I'm at Los Alamitos now. I think it's a great to be in for your horse, and we've had so much luck shipping there and running at Santa Anita. It's been a pleasure, you know, that Doc Allred had the chance to let everybody in because we were in trouble with Hollywood Park closing, you know. And he jumped in and is going to have a race meet there. And I think that it's going to be great. We're in a new area in Orange County, which is beautiful and nice. And maybe we can get some new people to with the thoroughbreds. You know, quarter horse people are just been outstanding. You know, a lot of good people there. And I enjoy being there every day. And they're so supportive of this horse. You know, it's unbelievable. All the congratulations and, you know, so we're helping them and they're helping us. You know, it's great.
Well, they've also been very good to you in another way. You actually have a meal named in your honor on the menu.
On the menu, yeah.
Yeah, in the Vessels Club, right?
That's another funny story. It cost me about $1,500, that little story, so I'm not getting back to that. No.
It came back to bite you.
To it, I can tell you how it all come about. I don't know if you guys want to listen to it.
Absolutely.
All right, okay. I trained for Doc Allred, too, and we were running a horse that night, a thoroughbred, going 4.5 furlongs. And I just got finished winning the San Felipe, and you know, I'm all pumped up, you know what I mean? It's a $300,000 race, you know, I'm
sure.
Saying, wow, you know, I'm ready, you know. So rather than I had to get back to run the horse for Doc in the first race at Los Alamitos, so I says, come on. I had about 20 people that were all in our party. And from there, I says, come on, I'll buy you dinner at Los Alamitos. He has a great, they call the Vessels Club, great place to be. It's like, he has a gourmet restaurant there, believe me, but I tell you, it's probably one of the best restaurants I ever had. It's a racetrack. And I've been all over, you know. So I went down there, and on the menu, you know, prior to this, They have an Art Sherman combo. It's a petite steak, lobster, and shrimp. $38 a copy, you know what I mean? And it was good, you know. So now I got all these people, and they're having a few cocktails, and we just won the race, the first race, and, you know, we're all pumped up. We won with a race at Santa Anita. We won a race at Los Alamitos, and Doc Oliver was all happy that, you know, all the people from the Thoroughbreds came over and for his quarter horse racing at night, you know, which is great. So we're all ordered. And I had a lot of everybody on the tables. I think around the 20 people all ordered Art Sherman combo. You know what I mean? And when I got that tab, I said, "My God!" I said, "Couldn't you put me down as a salad or something, a petite salad?" I said, "That would have been very good." So that was that. That was my experience with the Art Sherman combo, I can tell you that. It was fun, though, you know what I mean? I was glad to pay the tab. I was so high from, you know, having that afternoon that we did have, you know.
Yeah, I can only imagine. You know, I don't know if there's ever been another Derby horse to train at Los Alamitos, has there?
No. And I told Doc after the San Felipe, I said, "Listen, if we win the Santa Anita Derby, I want you to put on the sign, you know, it says Los Alamitos Racetrack, and I said, I want you to put Home of California Chrome on there." And sure enough, the next Sunday when I was there, I looked up, and there it said the sign, Home of California Chrome, as it went by, and I said, "Wow, we did it," you know.
You know you've made
and
it when.
And that made me feel good, you know what I mean? And everybody, you know, and enjoys the horse. We know we got so much publicity, you know, coming with people that never been at Los Alamitos and saw what a nice facility he made, you know what I mean, made a beautiful mile track for us. And I just think he's just kind of like the savior for the Thoroughbreds too. I know he carries all the quarter horses, you know, and he's a big quarter horse breeder, and I've been up to his ranch. He breeds 100 quarter horses every year, you know. And they're gorgeous animals, you know. I enjoyed riding. I used to ride some quarter horses at the fairs when I was riding. Enjoyed riding them, you know. It was quite a thrill.
Well, make no mistake about it. It's not just about Art Sherman when it comes to training horses. Your operation is very much a family business. Talk a little bit about that, Art.
Oh, yeah. You know, after I left it, I told Steve, my oldest son, I said, "Hey, listen, you were my assistant trainer for 10 years. I said, you're ready to go on your own." And I said, "You have all my tech and all my clients." I said, "And I know you're going to do a good job." And, you know, he was so thankful. You know what I mean? I just turned the whole operation over to him, you know. And sure enough, he's been, you know, second. He was leading trainer on a couple of meets, and he's always second to Hollendorfer right now. But I said, "Hey, that's better than, you know, you remind me of Hertz and Avis in the car." You know, he's got to be second best, but hey, what's wrong with being second on the standing? God, I would have loved to be second on the stand in a lot of meets. And he does an excellent job, a good horseman, not only because he's my son, he's a good guy too. You know, I enjoy him.
Well, I had the chance to talk with your other son, Alan, when I was at Santa Anita this past weekend, and Alan told me that he was a lot like you in the fact that he always wanted to be a jockey before eventually becoming a trainer.
Alan told you that? Oh, I used to get scared when he was little. When he was 4 and 5 years old, I'd look around for him. He'd come to me at the barn when I was training horses, and you know, and I'd look around for him, and sure enough, he'd be in the stall, sleeping right next to one that was laying down, and it was the darndest thing. I was afraid to go in there and disturb anything because I thought maybe the horse would roll on him, but they knew when that little guy was right there and never made a move to ever step on him or do anything. It was something else. So I knew right away it'd be hard for me to get him from any other position but to be a racetracker, you know, when he grew up.
Do you remember your reaction when Alan told you that he wanted to ride races and kind of follow in your footsteps?
Well, you know, riding races is, you know, you have your ups and downs there. You know, I had a lot of broken bones. You know, I broke my ankle in 3 places and lacerated my spleen and punctured my lung. You know, there isn't a jockey that don't get beat up. You know, you just hope that you recover later on in life to where it don't hurt you and, you know, where you have problems, you know. But it's a great life, too, you know what I mean? And I don't know, you know, sometimes you can't describe how it feels, you know, to ride a horse, you know what I mean, have that whole animal underneath you and the competitiveness coming down the lane. You know, it is really a strikingly different phase of your life, riding horses. You know, it's to me one of the finest things that could happen to you when you're riding a horse, and you know you got, you know, the strength underneath you and the heart underneath you. You know, I used to love to ride. You know what I mean? And then like any other sport, you get up in the 40s, you're not like you were. You know, it's a young man's game. You know, there's a lot of great riders now that, you know, Stevens and Smith and all the guys that have a little age on them. I always laugh, you know, you can't beat the experience. But I give them a lot of credit now. They're all top athletes, you know. There was a few of my eras of life that they used to like to eat and drink a lot more than one of the jocks when I was riding. So they weren't around as long, believe me. So I give a great admiration. I don't give much instructions. You know, I figure, hey, there's so many things that can happen in a race. If the horse has any kind of inconsistency, you know, where they want to run out or lug in or do something that's not normal, I always kind of heads up with him when he's going by. He likes to, if he's a half a length in front, he'll try to move over and lug in on a horse. So keep the stick in your left hand and straighten them out, you know. I might say that to them, and then they laugh, you know, because they know I was there. And you know, like Victor, I put him on a bunch of winners when he first started in the game up in Northern California. So we go back a long way. I had a lot of confidence in him, you know. When I got a chance to put him on California Chrome, I never hesitated.
Art Sherman joining me on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Art, does it give you an advantage having ridden horses in terms of now training them? Is that a bit of an advantage for you?
Well, you know, the old timers used to say that ex-jocks don't make good trainers, but I don't agree with them, you know what I mean? I figured, hey, listen, if you start up from the bottom up and you did everything that you could do, I think you have a background that makes you want to pick out a good horse. You know, how do you pick out a good horse? You look at conformation, you've got a good hip, good shoulder, a good walk, and there's something about him that you say, oh, wow, I could see that horse a year later. He's going to be something special. And I used to buy him for $1,500 and $2,000 when I first got started. One time I went back to Kentucky, I didn't even have the money. I wind up buying about 7 or 8 horses, and I was short about $12,000 thinking, how am I going to pay for these horses when I get back? And I talked to a few of the clients, and this one bought part of them, one bought. And sure enough, that I got them all sold, and I said, whoo, boy, I'm sure glad about that. And, you know, all of them turned out to be okay. You know, there wasn't no superstars in that bunch, but they were good horses and made money for the clients. And that's all you can do, you know what I mean? And we all look for superstars, but they're far and in between, you know. I just like to be where they can pay for themselves and, you know, don't cost anybody any money and have fun. You know, when the people get into this game, think they're going to kill them making money, they get really, I don't care how much money you've got and how much you can put into these horses. A runner's a runner, and I don't care. You know, you saw the horses where they paid $15 million, the Green Monkey or something. I said, how in the world could you give $15 million for a horse? And it was mind-boggling to me, you know what I mean? I said, you could have bought 20 of my stables for that one horse's, you know, price. And you know, as you see that how this game is, you know, money does not buy you a champion.
No, it certainly does not. And you know that now better than anybody, because after all of these years of sacrifice and dedication, you now find yourself with that superstar horse in California Chrome. And you talk about money not being able to buy a champion. Tell the story of California Chrome, obviously by Lucky Pulpit and out of a mare that cost $8,000. So because there is no expensive value.
No reason
value.
For it.
Yeah, no reason for
true.
It.
No, it's true. You know, You know, you look back in everybody's pedigree, you're going to find a champion. The mare is Enough for Love by Mr. Prospector, and he was a great horse. You got Lucky Pulpit, who was by Tappet, who was AP Indy. What could be better breeding than that if you go back, you know? But once in a while, something matches and something clicks. And if you got the right horse that comes out with the right conformation and the right balance and has some heart to him, there's where your champions are. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any difference. We've seen that over these games of how it don't make it, the size don't make any difference. And you know, this is what keeps new people in the game. You know, if it was just one-sided all the time, you wouldn't have the mom-and-pop operations. They couldn't afford it to compete, you know. But I think why this horse is so popular is just the connections, not going back to me, but going back to the people that bought the horse, you know what I mean, and took a shot for the first breeding, their first horse they ever bred. Now, we know how this game is, and when you can come up with a winner of the first foal, which usually is not as good as the second and third foal, you know, they're usually a little bit weak, the first foal, as a rule when you're buying horses, you know, but there was everything that shouldn't have happened. So, I mean, it is a little storybook to, you know, if you could write a book about that story on that.
So yeah, you really can. Yeah. And now you're sitting here just a few weeks away from your first Kentucky Derby starter. He is the likely favorite for the Kentucky Derby. Describe your emotions, Art, when you think about being so close to fulfilling that dream.
Well, you know, I don't want to get high on everything, you know. The hype is enough for me, you know what I mean? And I just want the horse to have a clean trip. If he's good enough, fine, you know what I mean? If he's not good enough, I'll find that out pretty soon, you know what I mean? But I just like his demeanor. He's a people's horse. He has no bad habits. He goes out there, does his job, drops his head when he gets through, walks home. Like nothing bothers him. You can ship him any place. Paddock never turns a hair. You know, he's got everything going for him. Now, if he's going to be good enough, he'll win the Derby. If he isn't, that'll be it. He'll try. The one thing, he's got a lot of try in him. So, racing luck will play a big part of that. You know?
Yeah, and like Swaps, he's a California-bred horse. Do you feel there's still that East-West rivalry in racing that there was in the 1950s?
Sure there is. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, how can it not be? You know what I mean? The Florida breds throw a good horse, you know what I mean? Kentucky, you know, to have all the champions, and California's kind of left in the shuttle. There's been a lot of cowbreds that are nice horses, but never many superstars, you know what I mean? They're hard to come by, you know.
When was the last time?
We're ready for one to come. I'm hoping it's the one I've got.
But when was the last time you were at Churchill Downs?
I was in the Breeders' Cup 2 years ago with Ultra Blend. She was another hard trying horse. We bought for $16,000. She made over a million dollars, and we sold her for $700,000 to the Japanese.
Wow. Art Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tell me about what it's like for you when you wake up each morning, you go to the barn, knowing how close you are to having all this become reality. What is that like?
Well, I'll tell you, it gives you a bigger step going to the barn, you know. I might want to get there a little bit earlier than I usually do, you know what I mean? You know, it's fun to know that you got good people around you, a lot of young people, you know, a lot younger than I am, you know what I mean? It makes everything right. I always stop and pick up a dozen donuts. I got a donut shop I go by. The guy, every time I like to harass him a little bit. Come on, Lil, let's get up, you know. It's already 4:30 in the morning, so he's up and making them donuts, but they're all hot and good. I take him to the barn. That's what I do every morning. And all my people have been with me for 15, 20 years now, the whole family. I got the brothers, the uncles, the sisters, everything. They're, you know, so it's a happy, you know, go-lucky type of barn. There's no uptight people around you. You know, it's small enough barn where everybody knows each other and they get along great, you know.
How important is it for you to have your sons and your family so close to you going through this experience?
Well, you know, I really appreciate it. You know, they got my back. You know, my, you know, when your son can give you a big old bear hug in the winner's circle, he lifted me right off the ground, and I'm saying, wow, you know, he's so excited, you know. And then my oldest son calls me and says, Dad, I love you, you know. You know, you get kind of water-eyed, you know, knowing that your family's got your back, you know.
Yeah, well, they're hoping to have your back one more time on the first Saturday in May, and that's only a few weeks away. And we talked about the story of California Chrome, kind of a rags-to-riches story. The owners are also a unique story because they're not your typical sheikhs or millionaires that we see so often in the sport. They're just regular working people. Talk about them for a minute.
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't even know what they did. You know, what guy makes those magnetic strips that is what you put on, you know, your driver's license and credit cards, and that's his business, you know. And the small little factory in somewhere out of Nevada up there, like it's, I think they're out in the Tules, actually, Gardnerville or something. I've been there. It's a nice little town, but, you know, you wouldn't, a lot of people wouldn't know where that is, you know. And then the other person that owns half of them is up there, Perry Martin and his wife, Denise. They live up in Northern California, and they have some kind of business where they test things for the aircraft to make sure they're reliable and stuff. So it's a different field, you know what I mean? And they work every day. They go to work, and you know, they're hardworking people. And that's why when I said to him one day, you know, when they come to me and they say, well, we just turned down $6 million. Don't take any more offers. I said, we're going all, you know, I said to myself, you know, how do you do that? You know what I mean?
I was just going to ask you the same question.
You know, that's realistic. $6 million could carry you for a long time. You know what I mean? But they said, no, we're in it to win it. So I'm saying, I'm with you. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. I can only imagine the offers have gotten even bigger after the Santa Anita Derby win as well.
Yeah, my phone's been ringing off the hook. It's unbelievable how people want to just have a horse in the Derby, you know, and have their silks, you know. And that's one of the reasons they don't want it. Right away, they wanted to change the silks. He got to run and buy our silks if we buy the horse, you know, 51%, you know. And I said, well, that's going to be a little bit hard. They want that jackass to be on the silks, you know, and that's what it is. DAP, which means dumbass partners, you know what I mean? It's a different group, believe me when I tell you. You got to laugh. You know, it's a funny story. But I was glad they told it in front of the press, because if I would have said that, somebody individual, they thought I would be crazy, you know.
Well, Art, could spend a whole another hour talking. There's only about 3 minutes left, believe it or not.
Oh,
and
that's great. It's been fun.
So enjoyable. So enjoyable to hear your story. Years from now, win or lose at Churchill Downs, what is the thing you want people to remember and to know about Art Sherman when they think back on the history of racing?
They're just a plain old guy that enjoys being on the racetrack. It's my way of life. I couldn't retire. They'll be throwing dirt in my face, probably scattering my ashes someplace out there on the racetrack, you know what I mean? And that's what I would want, you know what I mean? I've had a good life, met a lot of nice people, and, you know, I don't want anybody to think that, you know, that I need something special or race named after me or anything like that. I have a lot of friends, and it's been good, you know.
Well, Art, it's been an amazing story, amazing visit with you here this evening. Can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with me here on the show, and really want to wish you all the best moving forward down that road to the first Saturday in May, and let's hope that we have another Calbred winner coming up on May 3rd.
All right, I hope so. I hope it's California Chrome, the rock star.
Art, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Art Sherman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Wow. Talk about a trip down memory lane. I told you at the beginning of the show that Art has been there, done that. He's been in the game a long time, 77 years old. He has dedicated every moment of his life. This is all he's ever known. He's dedicated his life to the sport of thoroughbred racing. And now he finally is on the brink of that moment that everybody dreams about, and that's running a horse beneath the Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, a podcast available later on this afternoon on our website, later on tonight on our website at horseracingradio.net. Of course, you can check it out on iTunes as well. Don't forget, we're your exclusive home for the Kentucky Derby here in 2014. Visit our site for more information and a complete broadcast schedule. It's all horseracingradio.net. Special thank you to Art Sherman. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I am Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Dipton.